I think your engine just broke, Billy, and I think you're now on a...
Because you're going to interview me, but you have, like, the button that you can control this whole thing.
No, I think, honestly, I think you have a failed communication system in, what's the name of the town in Massachusetts you live in?
Westford, Mass.
Westford. It's been 30 years and I still can't remember it, but that's all right. So you actually got to see the end product.
Yep.
And it also gave you financial remuneration. Was this when you were unit manager and test support?
I was an individual contributor and I was proud of it. I guess the biggest accomplishment I got back in those days was they had what they called a senior engineer position, which usually was given to somebody for 15 years of experience and opportunities to do significant things. And I think at the time I was the youngest person that ever reached the title of senior engineer.
And why would that be? I mean, you talked about just a little bit. You've thrown off my interview, which I know you would have anyways. You've talked about this individual contribution that you were most proud of and had most fun with. And why do you think that was so important to you? And why did you not? Did this accomplishment happen so fast to you as opposed to the average of 15 years?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one of the things was I really had very little desire to be a manager back in those days. And it wasn't because of leadership. I always loved, being in a position to lead people. But part of it at the time, there just weren't a lot of good role models. I looked at that. It is a very political type environment as opposed to a creative environment, something where you could really feel at the end of the day. I mean, I guess basically something where you could wake up in the morning and you were just pumped to do, you were just excited to go to work. I know as corny as that sounds.
It's not corny at all.
That to me is the environment where, the best things come out. And that's really kind of what I seek, what I sought, after. And part of it, too, I guess at the time, the kids were young, they're involved in sports. Obviously, you and I go back a long way.
We'll go there.
I really think the basis of anything is, the fact that we grew up in a competitive nature, wanted to be, wanted to have success, wanted to... accomplish something. Win, basically.
You throw me off my thing because of the impressiveness of this diagram you sent me.
Uh-huh.
And tell me one question now, and then we're going to go to the basis of Billy Bowser. There's one thing I notice is that you still can't buy a good-looking tie, okay? You never could.
I didn't have to. You tend to forget. My dad... was in the clothing business, so probably the best clothes I ever had were when I was probably a teenager, okay? I probably had more suits as a teenager. In fact, growing up in Boston, and a lot of people probably don't know who Ted Williams is, or they've heard of him, but really don't understand, but Ted Williams was my idol. And Ted Williams, one of the things with Ted Williams, he never wore a tie. He hated to wear a sport jacket. He was a regular guy. He'd go to these meetings with like the president or all these other people, and he'd have a sport jacket on with an open shirt. And so you grow up in that environment. I'm not a fashion statement to begin with.
Well, you're telling me you had all these nice clothes, and I never saw once when you wore them. Okay, and
I wouldn't wear them with you because you'd throw something on them.
And also, it looks like in your picture that the tie in the top part of the shirt, is too small for your bull neck. And
bulging head?
It's choking. No. It's just squeezing your head. It looks like it's choking you.
The picture's probably airbrushed anyway, so you don't have to spend a lot of time on that.
It would have to be airbrushed. As people listening to this interview can tell, this is going to be a different kind of interview. But I want to go... before I leave that point, because I don't want to forget it. How did you break through this political environment that normally took 15 years to get through at General Electric and jump positions?
Well, I'll equate it to right now. I mean, you hear it all the time. Where's the leadership? You know, where are the great leaders? Where are the leaders? Where's the next group of leaders? Well, the bottom line is, I think for a true leader to really emerge, you have to have an environment that all of a sudden, you know, it clicks for you. You see something that is frustrating you so much, either you ignore it or you step up and do something. And I think for me, you know, I used to hear for years, I'd say, well, GE is not like other companies. If you turn down management opportunities, you know, you get so many, and then after that, they don't ask you anymore. And I said, well, that's ridiculous. I said, I can't believe that. I said, if that's the environment, I'm in the wrong place to begin with. I said, first of all, if I'm good enough, or if I'm a leader, people are going to find me. Because it's not like the competition is that great. I'm looking around and I'm saying, hey, you know, you got a lot of people here that are just going through the motions. I mean, that any large corporation, and I don't care where it is or who it is, has got a lot of waste, tremendous waste. You got and different types of waste, one of which is people waste, where people, you know, look at it as like a security blanket. They don't want to. You know, they're always looking, okay, you know, let me stay within this boundary. I don't want to look bad. I just, you know, and don't have the incentive to do things, you know, to step out and be creative and do things. And for me, you know, I really enjoyed, like I say, taking on the responsibility. Things would come along. You know, so I can remember a couple nights where I was on an interesting project in there where I basically worked. You know, I come in at 6 o'clock or 6:30 in the morning, and I'd stay through and I'd carry the thing through. Sometimes, you know, two shifts, three shifts. I know a couple different times I worked 24 hours straight on something because it was interesting, because it was important.
But somebody must have noticed this.
Well, that's exactly what happened.
Okay. Well, we'll go into that later. I mean, somebody must have noticed this overachievement work ethic thing. What I want to do is actually go back to our childhood, okay? And you know, from sitting on the front porch with me, we used to talk about things on a personal basis and connect things, and you were hungry for that discussions. You loved them, and I loved doing them with you. And we just sort of broke out of the mold of, sports and school and the kind of the morons around us. Brookline was pretty full of them because they were pretty full of themselves. And we tried to answer why, you know, and what, okay? And this led to me, of course, going for my psychology major. And what I'm trying to find out is is characteristics, I'll tell you right up front, and commonality of successful entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
And I've interviewed two other entrepreneurs, which are people within corporations who have created their own businesses and treat it like their own business. One guy is the head of three states for Davy Tree, which is his name is Doug Bohr, was the number one horticultural company in the world. The other is a banker who came to Naples from Cincinnati and started with a $1 million $1 billion bank in a population of 360,000. And believe me, Fifth Third wasn't that big at that time. It was only a $100 million bank or so. And so she created in 10 years by herself, literally, a $1 billion bank in that population bank, mm-hmm. beating the crap out of SunTrust and Wachovia and Bank of America and all the rest of the boys. You're batting cleanup for this group of this superior group of entrepreneurs, and going back to their childhoods and is important to me. It hasn't been suggested to do by the professors, but they're giving us enough poetic license so that, because the professors in this course, I wouldn't listen to a guy who hasn't done it, okay? And, all the professors in this course have had their own businesses, some a multiple of times, otherwise, there's no way they would have credibility with me, would they? So we're going to talk about the behavior with and defining, have you define your childhood peer groups. And you've got to be very careful to make sure that that I am escalated to the king and as the mighty lion and Richard the Lionheart. No, actually, you don't have to be careful at all, but define your childhood peer groups.
Well, for me personally, ever since, and maybe part of it is just growing up in the Boston area, but sports to me was absolutely such a key. First of all, it equates so well, to a business or entrepreneurial environment because I think I mentioned this to you one other time, but I said, as you get to know people, as you're around people, one of the things you find, and especially in industry, you're going to meet, essentially 20 or 25 personalities all through your life. You're going to keep meeting the same type of people. The only difference is they have different faces, but the same characteristics, the same, either me, tentative or quiet or overbearing or whatever the case may be. And
I want to do those characteristics.
Yep.
And this is abnormal for me to stop you here. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to miss them. Can you identify those 25 people for us? I'm sure your age is going to interfere with your memory.
Because somebody once said to me, you mentioned age, but, it's all in the environment that you grew up in. People that grew up, in the, say the 60s were influenced by, the Kennedy assassination, and it's an event that you'll always remember.
Right.
People, in 2001 will remember 9/11 the rest of their life. There's certain significant events that form a lot of your beliefs or a lot of your background, and I just think that as you meet people, you have the me types. You have the people that are truly team-oriented types. You have the people that just are tentative. You have the individuals that can't look you in the eye because they just are either afraid of the position nervous. Their whole background behavior is like that. You have people that talk a good game, but when it really comes to the execution, it's all a charade. Like I say, there's different.
You're up to six, buddy.
Yeah, well, there's probably another 26 to go.
Well, I want you to keep going. I think it's very important from your experience of leadership in varying positions and varying companies to identify these people, because I think it's very important for this country right now. Okay.
To, well, I think part of it as we go on with these things will surface, because like I say, different examples or different experiences you go through.
Well, I'll tell you what. If you promise me to spend some time writing down the 25 personalities, yeah, so I can add them to the interview, okay, I'll let you off the hook.
Okay.
Let's go to your behavior and define your childhood peer groups. And I was unfortunate enough to be one of your peers.
Childhood peer groups is interesting because I'll go back a little bit to the sports thing. My dad always had this drive for me when I played sports early on. You know, I'd say, well, gee, Dad, there aren't that many kids in my age group, you know, that were, you know, in the environment I lived at, you know, or lived in. There were, you know, I loved baseball. I started off, you know, with baseball. Baseball was everything to me. I think a lot of it was the Ted Williams scenario that I gave you a few minutes ago. But,
well, we lived two blocks from Fenway Park.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It was a huge influence. We also lived right by the MTA station, the subway station, that for a dime you'd go in and you could see the Celtics, which was the greatest basketball team.
That's right.
Back in those days, it was just championship after championship after championship.
Cousy, Laskatov, Heinsohn, Russell.
Absolutely. Cousy, you know, why stop there? And then later on, Havlicek and on and on and on, not to mention Larry Bird and a few other greats along the way. But
well, let's divide this up between, there's two areas that they kind of divided up as the age of 5 to 12 and the age of 12, 14 to 16. And to help you out a little bit, okay, because I think the baseball thing, even though you and I played baseball together, we had an unusual neighborhood that you might as well describe and what happened.
Well, I think you and I probably helped make it unusual, because every time we would have any type of school vacation, be it Christmas vacation, be it spring vacation, whatever. I'm going to refresh your memory a little bit, too. We couldn't just be like, you know, normal kids and have a vacation and sit around and do nothing. We would always have some competitive type of league, either a basketball league or a football league or whatever, where we would pick teams. We would get all the kids in the neighborhood, whether they wanted to or not, I guess.
Yeah.
We'd form them into teams, and we would have a competitive league that we would absolutely keep score. And at the end of the week, okay, who was the winner? You know, who won?
Wasn't it more than that, though? I mean, you and I would traditionally play against Berganti and Caprio, which was a mismatch, and but the strategic planning.
Oh, absolutely.
That you and I did. Describe
it was
that.
About, you know, chemistry. It was about strategy. It was about, you know, and I mean, this is at a young age. I mean, we're talking before we were teenagers. This is back, you know, and basically in grade school.
Right.
And it was the beginning of number one, organizing. Number two, you know, like I say, strategizing. Number three, adjusting on the fly, competing, and winning.
Right.
You know? And believe me when I tell you, today, you know, I have grandkids today, and I watch them play soccer, and I watch them do things, and it's great because it's number one, it's a social thing. Get out there, be with people, make it count. But what drives me crazy is, where so many of these parents, well, don't keep score. You know, don't keep score. Let everybody win.
Excuse me. I'm sorry.
Life isn't like this. I mean, life is not like this. Do not, I mean, we've already lost so much of our competitive edge. I mean, to the point where we give things away to other countries so they'll manufacture it and then they own the intellectual property. And my point is, you gotta want to compete. I mean, if you're an individual that doesn't like to compete, all I'm gonna tell you is, don't waste your time trying to start a business or trying to, you know, kid yourself into thinking that you're going to be successful in a competitive world, because you are not. And, you know, you may want to just take a different route.
How competitive was you and I? I mean...
We were incredibly competitive. I mean, we were competitive to the point where it probably... Actually, maybe went over the edge a little bit. You know, I think in the long run, most people, if they talk to us individually, not with the two of us talking to each other, they say, this, you know, this person is a little bit off. But
well, I'm proud of that.
Yeah.
You've hidden that better than me.
I think, you know, it's interesting because so much of that for me carried over into work. I mean, every job I ever had, you talk about competitive and peer groups and the like, but every job I ever had, one of the things I would go out of my way to do, and let's face it, a lot of people, when they hear sports, they say, well, I'm not into sports. You know, what good is this for me? But the bottom line was, I would organize groups of people. I mean, one of the jobs I had, I was a director out at Fort Wayne, Indiana, and I heard that they had sand volleyball courts.
What, that job was with Lockheed, or that job was...
I actually went out there working for GE, and while I was out there, the business got sold. So they wanted to get out of the electronics business. We made all kinds of electronic systems, and they sold it to Lockheed Martin. And, but anyway, I would get groups together, we would have like cookouts or after work and play volleyball. And I was never a great volleyball player.
You actually were terrible. You were terrible.
Yeah, but anyway, it was funny because again, just the idea of seeing people do things together and seeing the personalities, you'd learn so much about your workforce, around the people around you, and they would learn about you too. You know, the type of person you are. Are you one of these people that just always makes excuses? It's, you know, they always point the other direction. It's not my fault. It was somebody else's fault. I mean, that's again one of the key personality people you make.
That's very interesting concept.
Your actions.
That's a very interesting concept. And here you are, a leader of a group up in Indiana. What was your title?
When I first went out there, I was a plant manager. We did really well. I ended up getting promoted to a director title, and that was really kind of helped kick off. You have the chart there of
It's an amazing chart, and I'm going to attach it to my interview.
It really got me going because, like I say, when you break down the barriers with people, and they get to know you, and you get to know them, and you trust each other, it eliminates so much of the bullshit. You know, when you have problems at work, you don't worry about somebody taking 2 days to tell you about it because they're worried how you're going to react or how you're going to respond to it. If they trust you and they know that you'll handle things in a professional, intelligent manner, you save so much time because when you have something go wrong, you know about it.
Well,
you know, it's not instantly pretty close to it.
Let me interrupt you because, as I always have, you went from, we're still staying on a child, you went from plant manager, aircraft controls at Fort Wayne, and then director of operations, and then VP of manufacturing operation, ocean radar and sensor systems, but you just gave me something interesting that you were actually interviewing people by them, their attitudes on the volleyball court. And also, is that, would you call that correct?
Yeah, I would say...
evaluating and interviewing.
Interviewing, but just the fact of, you know, seeing them outside the work environment, okay? Seeing, but getting to know people, getting to understand people, getting to understand what makes them tick. And how better than in a sports environment where you have successes, you have failures, you have pressure, you have, you know, can you loosen up? I mean, mean, what do you like outside of work? Are you, you know, are you a good person? Are you, you know, somebody who cheats? Are you somebody who's honest? Are you somebody who, you know, helps other people be successful? I mean, the people I love are the people that absolutely want to win. They want to get to the finish line, but when they get there, they want to make sure all the rest of their team is right there with them. Those are the kind of people that wow. I wanted to be my leaders and people that were my direct reports, people that really stepped out, not only got the job done, but did it in a way where everybody was part of it.
It's hard for me to say that's awesome, Billy, because you and I have competed with each other, but it is, you know, and, but do you remember back, okay, remember back, I'm going to give you a scenario, remember back, we're on Amory Field, and, down come, and we're probably in the seventh grade, okay, and these guys came down from Boston University. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, I do. I think we were a little older, though. I think we were probably in high school, and these kids were college kids.
Okay. You know, to that,
and
they say my mind
is... ended up playing football with them, as I recall.
Well, but do you remember how? I mean, I remember that they didn't want to play with us because we were so young.
We were so young. There were more of them, so...
and bigger.
Split us up and, you know, and intermix. And we said, no, I said, we're all a bunch of friends. We don't really want to play against each other. We'll play against you. And obviously they were older, but again, it was part of, you look at the situation and you figure out, okay, what are we going to do? And what are our strengths? What are our weaknesses? Who can do what? Who can't do what? It was kind of funny because even at an early age, and I know we both had the same characteristic, it was like, and my dad always harped that in me. You talk about peers, but...
we'll get to that.
But it was like, if you're not as good, you got to be smarter, you know? You got to either be smarter, and even that may not do it. You got to out-hustle. You got to just... You got to scrap and fight, basically. You got to do whatever it takes, you know, to get by.
Well, I remember us downing out them, stop and going them, double reversing them.
Trick plays, gadget plays.
Hitting them, okay, and them not expecting us as smaller people, although, Billy, I remember you were capable of hitting people way above your age.
Well, what I remember is we had a guy that had a fantastic arm. He was a quarterback, but he was scared to death about getting hit.
Right.
And what we ended up having to do, which I'm amazed I don't see more of it today.
Was that Briganti?
He would have somebody else play quarterback, and he would be like as a halfback or off to the side. And what we would do is the ball would be, this guy would just lateral the ball over to this quarterback, which would give him an extra 2 or 3 seconds. And he would invariably hit somebody down the field, and we'd drive the ball down and score. But again, it's just not to prolong this, but it was just another example of, you know, be creative. Look at what you have. Understand where you're weak. And it's the same thing in work. If you get somebody who's who's, you know, not good at something, don't force them. I mean, you can train them and help them, but some people invariably just can't do certain things well. Don't put them in positions where they're going to fail. Put them in positions where they'll be successful. And that's what a good leader does.
Well, in that sense, what we did was we knew each other's moves, okay?
Yeah.
We understood our strengths and weaknesses. We played to our strengths. And one last thing, we played to win and we didn't care. In fact, I remember that we were motivated by the fact that these kids were older and bigger and sometimes faster, okay?
Well, and cockier. I mean, that's always an incentive. When somebody tells you you can't do something, that's always the incentive, you know.
A key.
Have that spirit.
Oh, were they cocky? They were so cocky that what happened when we beat the crap out of them? Well, I think we had to leave the field because we felt that they might beat the crap out of us after the game.
I think we were. I'm not worried about that, but I think that they definitely were in shock. But again, it's a good example. And the fun thing about that, as good as we felt, some of the people that we had with us that had, thought we had no chance at all, it was just kind of a nice experience to see them do something that, you know, was you know, a couple hours earlier, they thought it was just absolutely impossible. So,
well, that's an interesting perception, because I've never heard you talk about that. For me, I think I was just so into beating the crap out of them that I didn't even think of that part of it. And I think that's what's made you successful from the inside. For me, I've had to demonize my competitors to I don't think it's been a strong point for me is picking teams and team leading. I had to overperform from the top. And I think, and that's why there was no way, as well as my complete irreverent attitude towards, you know, authority and stuff, that I could survive and prosper in the entrepreneurial environment, okay? As you know, I'm just not qualified to, you know, to be in a corporation and create within that corporation, because I had no patience, and I would voice that. But yourself, your team building stuff, you were able to do that.
But let me interrupt you for one second here, okay?
Well, it should be
one second.
Yeah.